You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King. You're here with Congressman Steve King of the 5th District of Iowa, and each week we try to bring you a great guest, someone that can really add to our knowledge base and contribute to the overall citizenship that's out there. We have some real good producers out across the central part of the United States, ag producers, producers of all kinds, people that are involved in manufacturing and exporting, and we have the great privilege today to have with us the U.S. Trade Ambassador, Susan Schwab. Ambassador, welcome to Conversations with Congressman King.
Thank you very much, Congressman.
We had a minute or so to talk before we went on the air here, and you brought up how we really first got to know each other. And I'd ask you if you could reflect upon that a little bit before I ask you about your background.
Absolutely, a very Washington kind of encounter. You and I were both attending a dinner at the Indian ambassador's residence. He was hosting a dinner to welcome the Indian agriculture minister. And we had a chance to meet with the agriculture minister, and both of us had the same message for the agriculture minister, which is, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if India opened up its market more to U.S. agricultural exports?
And I noticed that, how sometimes people think those dinners aren't really functional, but you can get more things done in a positive way in that kind of setting than maybe sitting down negotiating in some place like Doha or Cancun.
That is absolutely right. And as it happens, a little over 2 weeks ago, I was in India. I paid a call on the same agriculture minister. He remembered meeting you, remembered our dinner meeting. And, you know, he understands, I think, the importance of the Doha Round multilateral trade agreement, and that India can't expect to get away with doing nothing, that India has to contribute something in the way of market access.
You know, those are all fascinating subjects, and I hope to get into those. But I'd like the listeners to maybe have a sense of your background. And I want to characterize it this way, is that we had a high-profile U.S. Trade Representative, Ambassador Bob Zelek, and as he moved out and on to other endeavors, then Congressman Rob Portman from Ohio came in, one whom I'd had the privilege to serve with in Congress, and just a stellar individual, highly respected on both sides of the aisle. And he moved on to the Office of Management and Budget in the White House. The president needed him there. And so we had two changes at the top at the U.S. Trade Representative. And I'm just going to be fairly candid here, Ambassador. That many changes at that period of time wasn't something that was thrilling to a lot of us here in Congress that care about trade. And I will say that when I got to know about your background, and really I got to know how your mind works on trade first, that was enough for me. I didn't need to look at your background. But could you give us, this has been a great trade up. And I want to say that out loud. I am thrilled with the leadership that you provided at the U.S. Trade Representative's office. And sitting there in the cabinet the way you do and understanding this world economy and all of the components that are there. But one might think that you can arrive at this location in life by simply maybe being lucky or being appointed because your daddy gave a lot of money or something like that. So could you give us a little bit of your background on how you followed this path to become Ambassador Schwab?
Okay, I will do that. I started out my career as an agricultural trade negotiator in the office of the U.S. Trade Representative. We are, as you know, a small office, part of the executive office of the president, but also our own cabinet agency. And I was the lowest man on the woman on the totem pole when I got started trying to get American beef into the Japanese market. And spent the rest of my career moving in and out of government, spent some time on Capitol Hill working for Jack Danforth when he was chairman of the International Trade Subcommittee of the Senate Finance Committee, did his international trade work, trying to get, again, enforce U.S. trade agreements and open markets for U.S. exports. Worked for the first President Bush doing export promotion, went to work for Motorola, and spent a little bit of time in the private sector, again, doing international, and then decided to become an academic. So I spent the last 10 years at the University of Maryland as a dean of the public policy school. And when President Bush and Rob Portman asked if I was willing to come back into government to be the deputy U.S. trade representative, I thought, what a great opportunity to serve again. Little did I know that 6 months later I'd be the trade representative.
Well, what a saga that has been. And I want to emphasize, you know, as we're talking into beef and pork country, that your first job was as an agriculture and beef trade representative out of the U.S. office, the Office of U.S. Trade Representative. And you were negotiating ag at the beginning of your career. And now you find yourself as a U.S. Trade Representative, our ambassador, and still negotiating ag trade. What's changed?
Well, I'll tell you something. I think the American people, and certainly our agricultural community, would be surprised, perhaps pleasantly surprised, to learn how much time and energy goes into negotiating agricultural parts of all of these trade agreements. As you know, agriculture tends to be the most sensitive issue in any trade negotiation. And when we negotiate free trade agreements, when we negotiate for example, Russia's accession to the World Trade Organization, when we negotiate in the multilateral trade arena like the Doha Round, agriculture is always the touchiest, whether it's market access, trying to open new markets for our exports, whether it is trying to get the Europeans to stop subsidizing their farm exports, whether it is other countries wanting us to stop subsidizing, putting trade-distorting subsidies into our domestic support programs. So those issues are always with us, and I've always been convinced that if you can negotiate agriculture, you can negotiate just about anything.
Well, I can attest to that from having gotten my start in the small business doing soil conservation work. I went out and bought a bulldozer in 1975 and began doing terraces, dams, waterways. So I worked with a lot of our egg producers right there in the hands-on, side-by-side, in the cold and in the heat. And you get an understanding of what goes on in their minds, and you get an understanding of what they're up against. And I want to make sure that our egg producers that are out there doing such a good job understand the job that you're doing on the other end that's helpful to them. That's part of this conversation today. And I want to go on record also, Ambassador Schwab, as I am for market access, just in case anybody wonders. And I know you've advocated for that for a long time. And the negotiations that go on across and around the world, one of the things that I wanted to bring up, and I'd ask you this this question, is we just most recently in the last several months approved the DR-CAFTA, free trade agreement. And I looked down through that list of the commodities and the commodities that come online and the way that all is set up. Could you see anything in that trade agreement that was detrimental to any of the producers in the United States?
Oh, absolutely not. That was a win-win for American ag producers. The Dominican Republic CAFTA free trade agreement, we need to remember that those countries already had virtually unlimited market access to the U.S. market. And so what we did in DR CAFTA was we leveled the playing field. We opened their markets to our exports. And particularly in agriculture, that was really, really tough. They are concerned about, or were concerned about, poultry imports, about beef imports, about rice, about corn, all of those commodities. And it was a tough slog to open those markets. And I give those countries a lot of credit because they had a free ride up until that point. But they wanted a free trade agreement. We wanted a free trade agreement, and those there is no single loser in the United States from that deal.
That was how I looked at it. I looked through all of those commodities, and it was astonishing to me that the market access into the United States for those countries that were part of the DR-CAFTA trade was opened up. I believe the number of the night to the year was 1983 by Reagan, with an effort to try to get some trade going so we could bond to stronger relationships to kind of fight off the Iran-Contra, it was the Iran-Contra event, it turned out to be, but the Contra situation down in Central America. And since that time, we hadn't had access to their markets and their countries. I don't know how you talked them into that. What was in it for them?
Well, the one area, there are two areas that they were interested in. One is by making the free trade agreement permanent, they figured they could get more investment, not just U.S. investment, but investment from other countries and from their own entrepreneurs. Because if they knew that this trade, this free trade, was going to continue for the duration, you had less capital flight, you know, less money going out into Swiss bank accounts. So one, the investment opportunities for them. And two, we did give them some additional access in sugar. Not very much. I mean, fraction of the U.S. market, but that was also significant to them. And we continue to have import restrictions on sugar.
Is that a teaspoon a day, something
like
that?
It was about a teaspoon a day. You got it absolutely right. But I mean, the thing that our farmers tend to get, really tend to understand more than an awful lot of other folks in the economy, is that 95% of the world's consumers are outside of our borders. So where do we think the growth is going to come from? It's CAF to DR. It's Peru and Colombia. It's Korea, and so on and so forth. I mean, Peru, as you know, we've got free trade agreements that we've negotiated with both Peru and Colombia, as well as Panama and Korea. Peru and Colombia, again, already have virtually unlimited access to the U.S. market. And what they've said they're willing to do is open their markets entirely to U.S. exports, huge potential markets for U.S. beef exports, for pork exports, poultry, chicken leg quarters, rice, corn, so on.
You're listening to Conversations with Congressman King. This is Steve King, and we're here with U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab, our ambassador that takes care of the global trade and is doing, in my opinion, a fantastic job. Susan, you just laid out some of these things in this hemisphere in the bilateral trade agreements that we're negotiating, in addition to the broader DR-CAFTA trade agreement. And it takes me back to, normally I'd say harkens me back to, but we're talking in Iowa now, so this takes me back to the time where the WTO trade negotiations were in Cancun, and the way that situation melted down there. There were the G20 or the G21 group that lined up against the United States and against, I think, the European Union. But their position caused it to melt down about 3:30 on a Sunday afternoon, as I recall. And I remember looking at that, thinking all of this effort into this trade, and now it all goes for naught. And I had a conversation with one of your predecessors, Ambassador Zelik, and asked him if he would focus on bilateral trade agreements so that we could build our own relationships with the bilateral arrangements and try to break up the G20 group so it didn't coalesce into an anti-United States trade group. And to what degree would you say that's been successful today?
I think that the success we've had with our bilateral free trade agreements really has had an impact on the G20 and the G33. The G20, as you note, are made up of 21 developing countries that have a real interest in seeing the U.S. limit our domestic support. The G33 is actually, I think, 46 developing countries that don't want to open their markets in agriculture, and they all came together in Cancun and tried to turn this into a North-South negotiation. And one of the key points about the Doha round has to be that developing countries, particularly advanced developing countries, open their markets, including in agriculture. And I think our free trade agreements, our bilateral deals, such as the one with Peru, such as DR-CAFTA, such as the one with Colombia, and now with Korea, which is a gigantic market, as you know, fourth largest market, export market for U.S. farm products, that convinces some of these countries that if they don't get on the bandwagon and negotiate in good faith in the Doha round and on a multilateral context, they're going to miss out. And so I think it's been very persuasive, and it's also been an opportunity to lead by example.
Well, and Ambassador, when I look at this, they think that your office is this huge office with all this staff pushed out all over the world with an unlimited budget. And I know that you're tight on staff. You've got some real good people there. But one thing we can do as a large nation is we have the ability to negotiate each of these bilateral trade agreements where a smaller country wouldn't have the resources and couldn't probably have the leverage to get that done.
No, you're absolutely right. We are, by government standards, we're a small business by government standards, 230 of us here, small and mighty, and we work very, very closely with the Department of Agriculture, Department of Commerce, Treasury Department, and so on, but it is a lot of work, and luckily, we've gotten enough experience, and we're far enough on the learning curve, so we really have a template. And we can take it from one country to another. And a lot of countries come to us and say, oh, we want a free trade agreement with you. And then when they look at what it entails, they say, oh, well, maybe not. That's really hard. You really mean it when you say it's got to be comprehensive and everything has to open
yes.
up. But we mean it, and we've been able to show it.
Ambassador Susan Schwab, it's been great to have you here having these discussions about our world trade. As a U.S. trade representative, you carry a lot of knowledge into this. I appreciate it very much. I hope we can take up this conversation and subsequent to the end of this particular program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.